You are listening to the United States of Football Show, your source for American soccer news, views, and opinions. My name is Earl Reed, and this is the United States of Football Show. We are recording on April 9th, 2014. It's been a couple of weeks since we have had a podcast out. Life has gotten busy, but life isn't quite so busy tonight. So, well, at least not for me. For Robert Hay, things are still pretty busy, so he isn't here. But instead, I have a real treat for all of you because my old partner from Major League Soccer Talk, Daniel Feuerstein, is here. I've been on his show a number of times, Feuerstein's Fire. Daniel, it's great to have the at least two-thirds of the gang back together.
It's great to be back with you, Earl. Of course, we've always had a lot of fun doing the old MLS Talk podcast, and anytime you give me the phone call, you need me on the US of Football podcast, you know it's an automatic, and love to be back on the show.
And sometimes you slum it when you need some Philadelphia point of view, you have me come over and kind of muck up your show.
I have to find the decontamination bottle to try and spray the hard drive, but
but you know, we usually have a lot of fun, and
yes, we,
it's you know, it is what it is.
Yes,
so
it is.
We hope we have a good show here for you. We have some different things to talk about, but what we're going to start with is it's sort of like, I guess, what we would call an overview of almost like the last, what would you say, 10 years?
I think so.
There was a story that came out this week on Grantland, which is ESPN's whatever, kind of long form blog kind of thing, I guess is what you would call it. I don't know. That's probably a very poor rendition. I mean, some people don't hold it in very high regard, but we'll take it for what it is. For the fact Bill Simmons runs it, which might make some people laugh. But anyway, so Graham Parker, who writes for The Guardian as well as a couple other places, but Grantland as well, he came out with an article. I think it's actually from the second in the series, which talks about how, you know, Major League Soccer has basically gone from the point of contracting teams back, was that 2002?
Yeah, around 2002, just before the 2002 season got underway in MLS. And, of course, that's when the USA had that great run in the World Cup in the South Korea section of that World Cup that year, which was shared by South Korea and Japan.
So, I mean, his article was basically, you know, I'm not sure how much we actually want to talk about the article itself, but maybe we can just talk ourselves on how, I mean, we can reference it some, but, you know, that now the league has gotten to the point where, you know, after contracting, it's now at, what, 19 teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be 21 next year.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan Tannenwald at Philly.com this week sprung the news that there are significant movements being made towards finalizing Atlanta as the, what would end up being the 22nd team. It will probably beat Beckham's team in Miami to the punch as far as when they're actually going to launch. But, you know, there's been a lot of movement here in the last year or so from MLS. I mean, a lot of talk of expansion, but this is, you know, it has been quite a progression for Don Garber as commissioner, taking over from Doug Logan and basically turning this league from something that at one point looked like it was going to fold rather quickly into something now that appears to have, you know, dug its feet in and now may be poised to take over, you know, sort of the market segment.
Well, I can definitely tell you before I even got into the blogging sphere, covering Major League Soccer and, of course, then the Metro Stars, you know, you heard those stories that the possibility that the Miami Fusion and the Tampa Bay Mutiny were going to be contracted because, A, the league was running Tampa Bay at the time, and, of course, Ken Horowitz ran poorly Miami Fusion, that those sides were going to disappear. And at the time, you're thinking to yourself as a fan, or at least my feelings were, You felt terrible that you're going to lose two teams that you didn't want to lose, but for the good of the league to stay around, it had to happen. Now, I'm not saying I had ill will towards Tampa Bay Mutiny and the Miami Fusion, but you have to look at the perspective as a whole. And for some strange reason, it did work. And you got those two new teams in Real Salt Lake and, of course, Guadalajara Chivas giving us their USA team, which, of course, is this will be the last year of it in MLS in 2014. There'll be a rebranding afterwards. And then, of course, Toronto FC, the first Canadian side to come into MLS as a expansion side, and more and more. And we saw plenty of teams coming over from the lower levels to become a part of MLS.
So I mean, let's just go ahead and pick. I mean, this is just something coming off the top of my head. What do you think has been Don Garber's biggest achievement as Major League Soccer commissioner since, I guess, 1999, which, you know, predates the contraction of Miami and Tampa Bay, but still, you know, he made that decision, and, you know, there have been a lot of different, things that he has done to grow the league itself, the game in this country. What do you think has been the most pivotal thing for him so far, most impressive, let's say?
Well, I will say this. I would say it's impressive that not only getting on the right track with keeping the league alive, obviously, is the number one thing. I also have to say that if someone's going to come in to this league and to build a stadium to keep the growth going, that's also another positive. Also, I mean, we have to say the designated player rule is also another fantastic rule, even though I know there's still many people that are still screaming for a higher salary cap, which I do agree with. But still, these are moments and these are ideas that have come off the drawing board and have become a reality. So that is really the big thing. And at the same time, the creation of Soccer United Marketing, we have to say that is also a big thing that Don Garber has done to keep the league alive. And obviously, certain contracts with these great clubs that come over from Europe for these summer preseason tournaments, as well as marketing with the Mexican national team to have some of their friendlies in the U.S. I just think those are the moments and those are the times where I say MLS has been very successful keeping our league alive past 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree as far as one specific point, too, is that, and maybe expand on it, you know, guys like me, and I'm sure you to an extent, and there are plenty of others, are constantly harping on the league, oh, you need to expand salaries, you need to, get better players in. The thing is, as much as I think that would definitely make the sport better, would make the league improve, I also have to say that his moderation on that, and you know, he brought in the designated player rule, but it's all been done in what I believe is a rather measured pace. And yes, there are going to be certain people, we don't need to mention any names, who will constantly gripe about we should just make it open. We should just, you know, forget about salary caps. The litany goes on. But, you know, and that, yes, it's helping the owners to make money, and maybe making money isn't such a good thing. Whatever your view on it, I do think it's good to have someone in there that does want to keep the reins on, because I think that, you know, the sport itself, it's grown a ton. It's just not quite in that runaway mode where it could just take off. I mean, maybe Brazil can be another step in that direction. You know, it seems like each World Cup picks up more and more fans in this country. I still don't think the critical mass is quite there to be able to support this league if you were just to take the, you know, take the governor off, so to speak, and just let them, you know, sign players for ungodly amounts of money. You know, as much as I, would love to see it. I just don't think that would be healthy at this point.
And I agree with you, actually, Earl. I do agree with you on that, because I don't think right now we're at a pace where, you know, look, we're going through season number 18 right now in Major League Soccer. We have 2 years to go before this league reaches a 20th season, before we celebrate 20 years of American soccer here in our country. And I try to throw out an idea where, you know, I'm going to take those people's sides, that they want open leagues, that they want no salary cap and stuff. And then I'm also going to take the side of, or at least look at the side from where MLS is coming. I've always said, while single entity has done its job, I think we're at a point where it's time to start reducing it. I think it's time to start not seeing a complete kill of single entity, slowly but surely start to reduce what single entity is, because I think now, or maybe in a few years' time, this league can survive without it. And I really truly believe there's enough support for Major League Soccer to continue forward without the use or the crutch of single entity. Should there still be a salary cap? Yes. Do I think it has to be at the level where MLS wants it? And that's where I say no. I think it's time to raise the cap. You can still have a salary cap. You just don't have to make it so drastic. Slowly but surely, if you have a good dialogue with the players, and everyone knows at the end of this year, the players union CBA will be done. And if you're going to have serious dialogue, serious discussions, it's time to have those type of talks now. And then we don't have to worry about a strike if the league can finally start raising the cap. I'm not saying it has to be, all out like $5, $10, $20, $30, $40 million. At least at a very good competitive level that all the teams can fight for. Those players that do want to come over from Europe and they do want to apply their trade here in the States, because it's still a strong league. It's a competitive league. And to quote Thierry Henry, he says, don't assume you think you're going to rule MLS. You got to come here. You got to play here, and you will see why this league is not as easy as you may think.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can agree with most of those points, I believe. I let out some praise for Garber. I want to put a little bit of not so much praise here, especially for what I believe in the last few. You could say Orlando's fine. You know, Orlando, I think, did have a pretty strong supporter section, and you know, I think the culture has started there. But I'm a little worried about the track of the announcements of New York City FC, of Miami, as well as Atlanta, that some of this seems to be driven by the money and isn't being driven by the development of the team in an organic fashion through gathering supporters together.
I agree.
I'm a little worried that Atlanta could end up being another team such as the New England Revolution, because Atlanta is going to be owned by Arthur Blank, who owns the Atlanta Falcons, and he wants this team to be sort of the surrogate to the Falcons in their new stadium, which is going to, I believe, have a roof, or maybe a retractable roof. I'm not sure which.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a turf field. And so that there have already been players in the league. I believe Carlos Bocanegra was one that was tweeting about, not wanting to play on turf and, being upset that they're going to be putting a team in Atlanta when Atlanta clearly does not value having a grass pitch down there. So
yeah,
I'm looking at this as it may work out just fine, but I'm worried that it could be a step back and that, this could be a recipe for disaster. It's tough to say. I guess the tough part is like Seattle and Portland were kind of ready-made markets. Mm-hmm. It's like they already had, Portland was already a soccer market to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle was pretty darn close.
Mm-hmm.
Vancouver's pretty close. I mean, up there. But you know, you also had like Montreal that I think grew from, you know, in its NASL days and had a supporters culture there to begin with. So it's been modestly successful.
I agree with
pretty,
you.
Pretty successful. And I mean, Philadelphia similarly, mm-hmm. not super successful, but you know,
but I will
successful enough. You know, it's they're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's not completely empty except for days when it rains out mm-hmm. or whatever.
Right. But I will anyway. Agree with you, though. I mean, let me just say this to Earl. I think Philadelphia, and give credit to the Sons of Ben, Philadelphia has snuck up on Don Garber, and he couldn't ignore what basically Philadelphians wanted. They wanted to be in Major League Soccer, even though there was no amateur. I mean, there was an amateur team, obviously, probably in Region 1 of U.S. Adult Soccer Association. Maybe a couple of USL Pro teams, obviously, like in Pittsburgh and like in Harrisburg in the USL Pro League, or at the time USL Second Division. But there was no real true Philadelphia professional side in any of the professional levels. But, you know, give credit to the Sons of Ben. They wanted to bring MLS to Philadelphia, and they proved it. And you know my argument against New York City FC. There has been no grassroots movement. There's always been rumblings of, well, we don't want to support a corporation like the New York Red Bulls because of their, you know, they're selling their product and stuff like that. And I can understand in some ways of it, but not all the way, because you know, there was no true grassroots support to bring in a second New York City team. It's like Garber's on his soapbox saying, I will make it happen. And it nearly didn't happen until the Yankees came in, because let's be honest, all it is really, you can say it's New York City FC. This is a true New York City team, which it really isn't, because it's going to be mostly controlled by Manchester City. And all they're doing is bringing their brand. And even though it's not the Manchester City shield, still, it's going to be a sidearm of Manchester City, like what Guadalajara did with Chivas in Los Angeles. So, you know, that's the problem there. And obviously the price tag was $100 million by Don Garber. So, and while they got their wish that they have a team, they're not going to play in a stadium that's made for soccer. There was talk about putting maybe a temporary venue in the first county that's north of New York City, north of the Bronx, near Yonkers Raceway, which is, of course, is harness horse racing betting and a casino as well. But that idea got shot down, as since they are neighbors or friends, business partners with the Yankees, they're going to play at Yankee Stadium. And many fans of other EPL sides that have been to Yankee Stadium for Chelsea versus PSG or Chelsea versus Manchester City, they say the sight lines are not that great for soccer at Yankee Stadium. So we don't know what's going to happen there in 2015.
Well, I mean, ever since they've announced that Yankees were part of that, it made me very much sure in my thought that they were going to end up playing there to begin with. I mean, why would you align with the Yankees when you're Manchester City, unless the only two reasons would be, one is that you wanted to have some sort of a presence in the New York City area in order for marketing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the owners of Manchester City have so much money. I don't think that's an object for them. If they want to market that team, they don't need the Yankees. What they want the Yankees for is a venue, and so
exactly.
So I mean, that's, and you know, maybe they can leverage Yes Network. I don't know. I mean,
it's going to happen regardless. Either way, Yes Network will be showing probably Manchester City games. I mean, they're already showing on Yes Network a City Life, meaning, of course, Manchester City. But then again, Yes Network has also been partners with Manchester United a long time ago, and they showed Man U TV. They have even shown Arsenal TV before this partnership with Manchester City. So I don't know what the Yankees are doing on the soccer section, to be honest. They don't know what they're doing.
Well, as far as the future goes, I think what are the number one things on my list, and I don't know if you probably would agree, but maybe you have a couple of things. But number one is, like you said, the single entity thing. I'd like to see Chivas USA get sold and rebranded, and the Houston Dynamo sold from Anschutz. And so that way you would have all 21 teams going into next year being owned by 21 different ownership groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you know, maybe you can't split up the single entity yet, but you could slowly start to remove the, you know, the shackles, so as to speak, that are placed on teams by the single entity.
Absolutely.
The other thing is the stadium situations in both D.C. and in Foxborough or Boston, whatever you want to call it. You know, I think you need to see clear resolution on those two situations within the next, I mean, really the next year, I think. But I don't think you're going to get that with New England.
No, I think New England's a little bit more of a difficult case of locations. I know that I've heard stuff about they want to be closer to Boston, or at least try and get closer to a train station that leads into Boston. Foxborough is a bit far away, and it's only one way to get in and one way to get out. But once again, you know, it's tough to see a New England Revolution game. And, you know, those guys over in that the Fort section, you know, I think they also want to see the Revolution finally get their own stadium and not play on the field turf. I mean, look, I mean, obviously it's working in Seattle, because in Seattle there's a real love for the game from everyone, and they don't care where it's played. I mean, they'll go play over at the training center at Tuque Willa, where of course
it's downtown.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, it's right not there. Like you have no real issues with mass transit.
No, you don't. And the Amtrak station is also there too on King Street. So at least, you know, you're not far away from a Seattle Mariners game, a Seahawks game, as well as a Sounders game in the downtown area. It works. It truly works over there. Portland, it works. It's in downtown area as well. There's a light rail that goes to what's it called now? Because it's not Jeld-Wen Field anymore. I forget.
Providence Park.
Thank you. Providence Park. And then I probably have to give $5 to the Portland fans for my little error. But still, though, I mean, it works because it's already in the downtown area. Houston, it's also in the downtown area. It's not bad. But once again, and I agree with you and other people who have said this too. Right now, MLS is looking for the money. And if this is the way that they're going to try and fix the CBA by making sure they have enough money in their pocket to go forward and making a better deal with the players, and that also includes the TV deal, which it hasn't really been officially announced yet because of the combination of Fox Sports with ESPN, and apparently MLS doesn't want to be on Fox Sports 2 because it's not in every household. I'm lucky to have it. But it's not in high def. It's in standard def. But still, sooner or later, that well is going to run dry when its expansion fees are low. And then we're going to say to Don Garber, now what? Where are you going to get the money from?
Mm. Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's – and so, like you said, the CBA – I mean, those are the other things that are current, you know, definitely on the horizon, need to get hashed out in the next couple of – well, the next year, I mean, by next season. So it could get ugly. It could be easy. I guess it depends on how the players want to approach it. But I think we're going to take our first break. We've talked about this a lot. It's been a nice segment to reflect on past dozen or so years of Major League Soccer and where it's going. Next in our second segment, we will talk about the present, which is games that happened over the weekend, some decent results, some high-scoring affairs in the Northwest, and you are listening to the United States of Football Show. We're back for the second segment of the United States of Football Show. Earl Reed here with my guest host for this week, Daniel Feuerstein. He's sitting in for Robert Hay, who has a prior engagement which has kept him from being a part of this MLS Talk reunion kind of show. So, we're going to go into the weekend's matches. A lot of games to cover, so I will get started with the first one, which is Portland hosting Seattle at Providence Park, and it was on national television on NBC Sports Network, and it was a high-scoring affair. The final score, it ended up being one of those blasted draws that Americans seem to hate so much. 4-4, though, was the final. Lots of action, kind of end-to-end pretty much the whole match. Kenny Cooper opened the scoring for Seattle, and then you know, Portland got a couple goals, one from Diego Chara and then Diego Valeri. Chara got his second in the second half after Clint Dempsey got his first, so that made it 3-2 for the home team. And then Max Arruti actually put them up, you know, 4-2. It looked like Portland was going to be able to salt this one away. But then, sort of the man of the moment, Clint Dempsey, he found his form, and he's basically went off like a shot. Got his second goal in the 85th minute with assist by Obafemi Martins and Lamar Nagel. And then, unfortunately for Portland, they committed a penalty on DeAndre Yedlin, which gave Dempsey the chance to complete his hat trick from the spot. So neither team was able to get a goal after that. So the first edition of the Cascadia Cup for this year ends in a 4-4 draw. I guess this is probably a good result for Seattle. You know, Portland looked like they had this in the bag. I would say Timbers fans are probably pretty disappointed that the Sounders were able to come back and get a point out of this one when they were in such a good position heading into the latter stages of the match.
And, of course, the New York Red Bulls, they traveled up north over the northern border to take on the Montreal Impact over in Canada inside the Big O, the Olympic Stadium. It was an early goal conceded by the Red Bulls as Andreas Romero got an easy chance to beat Luis Robles to give a 1-0 lead early on. And then all of a sudden, within a 3 to 4 minute span, Johnny Steele, the Man of Steel, gets a great cross from Lloyd Sam in the 31st minute, and he just bunts it past Perkins to level the score at 1. And then, of course, the big, big question on Twitter was, has Peggy scored? And Peggy Luyendula got his second goal of the season on a great opportunity from Marco DeVaio. DeVaio, who gave a free chance as he made a very bad cross pass to Johnny Steele. And as Johnny Steele got the ball attacking, made a nice, fantastic pass to Luyendula, who found a way to beat Perkins and make it 2-1, and that was the score at the half, 2-1 New York. Unfortunately, as Philippe Martins was wide open on a cross, and he shot a beautiful ball past Robles in the 59th minute in the second half to make it 2-2. It ended 2-2, but I will say this, the Red Bulls finally got a penalty called for them, not against them. Bradley Wright Phillips, early in the second half, was hauled down in the area, and Luyendula, unfortunately, could not convert as Perkins went the wrong way, but Luyendula hits the post on the far side. And once again, it was a 2-2 draw in Montreal.
Next, we'll move on to Chicago Fire hosting Philadelphia Union, a spring match at Toyota Park. And the Union end up getting a 2-2 draw out of this, although they had the lead for much of the match from the 39th minute on. Mike McGee opened the scoring, kind of cleaning up some dirty laundry there in the box. I would characterize this match as, well, MLS giveth, MLS taketh away. And last week, Aaron Wheeler made the team of the week as a defender. He's been subbed in as a spare defender in as a replacement for Austin Berry, who's been on the shelf. And the thing about Wheeler is that he's a center forward. Basically been converted in the offseason to a center back because of his size. Unfortunately for him in this game, he lost McGee on that first goal. And then he was actually... we'll talk about him a little bit more later in the match. Maurice Adoo gets his first goal since returning to the States on his loan from Stoke City. That leveled the game for the Union. Then from there, Leo Fernandez got his second goal of the year, which, you know, he's been quite a surprise for the Union. He looked like a guy who was kind of out of his depth last year, but this year he's come in seemingly great shape and, you know, ready to contribute. And, you know, he's an early fan favorite, been real hot so far. So heading into the half, Philadelphia was up 2-1 there in Chicago. But then the second half, Chicago changed things up a little bit, ended up getting the equalizer late in the game, 86-minute. And Ongono redirected a I believe he was the one that redirected it in front. It was like a kind of a strange looping header that ended up in the back of the net from the side. I believe that was from McGee. So it was just sort of a strange little sequence, and it had McMath fooled, and the defense wasn't really there. And then in the last few minutes after that, Chicago really poured it on, and there were at least two occasions where Aaron Wheeler probably could have been called for a penalty. He basically body checked McGee in the box. McGee almost scored on that chance, and so I believe Chris Penso didn't call the penalty because he did get his shot off. But later on, Anangano was getting through, and Wheeler basically kind of body checked him down as well, and Penso pointed to the spot. McGee took the penalty, and Zach McMath made a huge, huge save in order to save that 1 point for the Union. It was basically the last kick of the match. And so they escaped with a draw. Chicago probably had the better of this one for most of it. They seemed to frustrate the midfield of the Union. Had a number of chances to expose Wheeler in the back line. And unfortunately for the Fire, they end up only with a single point in this one.
And, of course, over at Columbus Crew Stadium, Toronto FC goes on the road and takes a 2-0 victory over the Columbus Crew. And Craig Berhalter, suffering, I believe, his first defeat of the season as a head coach for the Crew. Once again, the miracle signings of Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe come into play. This time for Michael Bradley, scores early on in the 11th minute from Mark Bloom on a very good goal. Toronto looking strong defensively. Usually around this time, you'd think Toronto would concede a silly goal, but they haven't. And in the 85th minute, late in the second half of regulation, Issy Nakajima Faran makes it 2-0 as once again Toronto wins this one by a final of 2-0. You were worried in the last match for Toronto when they visited Real Salt Lake that Julio Cesar was going to be injured for a while. Thankfully, he started the match, so at least the worries about Julio Cesar's injury not that severe. So at least for now, he's going to look good, probably be going to back home to Brazil for the national team for the World Cup. Don't know if he'll be the starting keeper, but obviously for Julio Cesar to go back home, maybe to be on the roster as maybe the second keeper for the Brazilian national team, that's a good thing too. But once again, the final score, Toronto wins on the road again. It's Columbus 0, Toronto FC 2.
And you are correct. That was Berhalter's first loss as a head coach at MLS. And you also forgot to mention it's the Trillium Cup. So
does that really count? Does that really count? I don't.
Well, I got a rag on
you. I ignore the Atlantic Cup with the Red Bulls and DC United because I don't consider that to be a real trophy either. So,
for those of you who don't know. Well, actually, just don't ask. I don't want to explain to you what a Trillium is, but it's like the most meaningless cup in MLS, and that's saying a lot. So,
isn't it a flower?
I told you not to ask. But yes, it is a flower.
That's what I thought.
So that kind of sums it up
right
there. So let's move on. Vancouver hosting Colorado up at BC Place. And the visitors come away with a 2-1 victory late. Jose Mari got 2 goals for Colorado, although Darren Maddox had opened the scoring for Vancouver. The key segment was a handball by Matias Laba, which earned him his second yellow, a red card. So that put Colorado at the man advantage, and that gave them all of the so basically within 5 minutes of that red card, Colorado had turned the game around and took the 2-1 lead on Marie's two different goals. Vancouver, they look good, but then you know, they've got to eliminate these stupid mistakes. That's kind of been their thing over the last few years, I think, has been, you know, they just haven't been good enough when it's mattered, and they just, if they could eliminate some of the dumb mistakes, which can, you know, lead them to be down a man or whatnot, that would really help them. But, you know, Colorado has also shown that they've been able to fight through losing Oscar Pareja. Pablo Mastroeni has been doing a good job as the head coach, getting them to play hard. They are, let's see, where are they? They're in fourth place at the moment in the MLS standings. So, you know, not a majorly remarkable match, but still good win for Toronto, or not for, why did I say Toronto? Colorado, excuse me, out at BC Place.
You also forgot to mention the amount of penalties they've been earning so far early this year, especially the one they shouldn't have earned at Red Bull Arena, but we will overlook that for the moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot.
That's
about
okay.
That.
That's all right. Anyway, DC United at home at RFK finally breaks the long losing streak as they defeat New England Revolution by a final of 2-0. Strangely enough, it looked like it was going to be a scoreless draw at half until Jose Goncalves decides to push the ball just over the goal line and into his own net for an own goal that gave DC United the 1-0 lead in the 43rd minute just before halftime struck. And then in second half stoppage time, Chris Rolfe gets his first goal as a member of DC United after the trade to DC, assisted by Fabian Espindola. A lot of bookings in this match, a lot of hard-nosed play in this game, but unfortunately for the New England Revolution, they fall by a final DC United 2, New England Revolution 0.
Houston versus Dallas. This was the Texas Derby. It was also the chance, the most recent attempt opportunity for Ricardo Salazar to basically screw over a team in MLS, which he takes a lot of joy in from everything that I could tell. Dallas, the road team in this one, got an early goal off of a set piece from Michelle. That was off a set piece, right? Yeah, I guess it was.
Yes.
I was blanking there for a second. And then Ricardo Clark evened the score in the 41st minute, finishing off a chance created by Brad Davis. And then all you know what broke loose.
Hell. All right.
I mean, and you kind of just got this. I'm going to go back. That one in the 31st minute was actually a penalty.
Oh, okay.
I just remembered. Yeah, it was a penalty. Yeah, it was a soft one at that. I knew that that was another aspect to Salazar's dreadful performance was a pretty touchy foul, basically right near the penalty spot, which got the penalty awarded for Dallas. I believe it was Mauro Diaz was taken down, but it wasn't very good at all.
Right.
And then in the 60th minute, David Horst went in on a tackle. I believe that was a Fabian Castillo. And straight red card. And I think if you look at the replay of that, that's a pretty poor red card to be handing out. Javon Watson scored on the ensuing free kick. A nice ball by Mauro Diaz, who hit him. And, you know, Watson put it away. And then another set-piece goal, but this time it was an own goal off Giles Barnes' head, even though it looked like Javon Watson was involved in the play. Barnes was actually marking Watson. And then the final goal in the 70th minute was also created by Diaz. He's obviously one of these number 10s, a guy that is doing a pretty good job replacing David Ferreira so far. He picked out Javon Watson down the right flank with a nice pass, put him into space, and Watson finished off the chance very coolly. And, you know, Dallas is a team to be reckoned with right now. They're playing really well. I mean, it helps to be up a man, but, you know, Houston kind of got the raw end of the deal in this game, so I'm sure their fans are hoping that Salazar stays far away.
It also doesn't help when Houston personality for soccer, Glenn Davis, throws down the gauntlet on the show last Wednesday talking about, come on, FC Dallas fans, let's see what you got. And they gave it to him.
Yeah. And he was remarking about the Dallas fans up in the upper sections of the BBVA Compass Stadium. So during the match. So, you know.
Hey, listen.
Do what you got to do.
Exactly. Exactly. Rile them up. Got to rile them up as much as you can. Well, everyone knows it was a 0-0 draw between Sporting Kansas City and Real Salt Lake. Nick Raimondo getting the day off because he was involved in the friendly with Mexico, where I didn't really blame him for those two goals. Not his fault when Omar Gonzalez is just ball watching and getting picked off for no reason. But a very serious red card was issued to Oriol Rosell in the 83rd minute late, even though this was a not so much of a foul fest, but a hard-nosed fought match. A couple of bookings here and there, of course. One to for Salt Lake, Nat Borchers, Chris Schuler, Chance Myers, and Claudio Bieler for Sporting Kansas City. But Oriol Rosell will not be playing in their next match for Sporting Kansas City as he was sent off in the 83rd. Saw the challenge and... You know, I have to say that that particular challenge, while he did go for the ball and got the ball first, he went through Sandoval afterwards. And apparently there has been some amendments to the rule. Dr. Joe Matchnick, of course, a former referee in U.S. soccer, following the news that's been going on over in the House of Football over in FIFA. It doesn't matter if you get the ball first. If you continue on and get the player, then you'll be booked or seriously sent off. And Rosell was seriously sent off. So the revenge game of MLS Cup final last year is not as entertaining maybe as the final was itself last year, but still each team receives a point. And once again, it's Sporting Kansas City 0, Real Salt Lake 0.
And the final match of the weekend took place on Sunday. Turns out it was also my birthday.
Happy birthday.
But, yeah. This one was on Unimas, which, and it also, it turns out, was what amounts to an extra home game for the LA Galaxy. I harp on this every time it happens, but this is supposedly a home game for Chivas USA, but it's not. It's another home game for the LA Galaxy. It's an unfair advantage they get every year, because that's the way it's set up. But anyway, enough of that. LA Galaxy wins their quote-unquote away game at the StubHub Center 3-0. Go figure. Robbie Keane gets a goal. Stefan Ishizaki, who I believe that's his first goal as a Galaxy player, unless I missed one.
Probably not, unless you're counting the CONCACAF Champions League, which he never scored.
Okay. And Bago Husidic also got one. So there's not much to report from this match. It was kind of a one-sided affair. You know, Chivas is obviously a bit better than they have been in the last couple of years. But, you know, there's still no heart about this team. And there really needs to be the rebrand needs to happen pretty soon. They need to decide what they're going to do with this, because at the moment, it's just flailing in the wind, and it kind of makes me sad to see. And it's helping out the Galaxy, which, you know, no other team really gets this kind. You know, imagine if, you know, Seattle was able to play a secondary team that's basically of NASL or worse quality. I don't know. Maybe that's going too far about Chivas. I mean, you know, Kubo Torres is a pretty good player, and they have some other. You know, Dan Kennedy is obviously MLS quality, but just doesn't seem as though they, you know, man for man match up to any other teams. So, anyway, that's my little spiel on that. So 3-0 for the Galaxy. I believe that's their first victory of the season. So congratulations, Sounder. I'm making all sorts of mistakes.
See, this is what happens when you have too many Ritz crackers and you're over celebrating your birthday.
It's what happens when you go. Yeah, it's what happens when you go away for a weekend and you don't immerse yourself in MLS action. You make mistakes and partially sound like a fool.
Yes.
So, apologies to our listeners. I will do better next week when I have. Oh, crap, the Masters is up. I'm a sucker for Augusta
yes,
National.
Yes, you folks, are.
But so that ends our MLS roundup. We're going to take our second break. And when we get back, we will talk about the rest of the news for the week and we'll wrap up the show. United States football, we'll be back in just a moment. We return for the closing segment of the United States of Football show. It's funny, Robert and I usually have some decent conversation, Daniel, but I think that the listeners will have wished that they had heard some of our banter offline because I think, I don't know, it's a lot more fun than, I hate to say it, Robert, sorry if you're listening, but I don't know. We usually find much more engaging topics to talk about, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what Robert talks about. Maybe it's always about DC United or Arsenal, but you mean it's not one of those this one time at Bandcamp? Nothing like that?
Actually, yes, that's exactly what he talks about. He talks about Bandcamp and Chess Club and you know, drinking wine and...
Oh, we're so sophisticated, my goodness.
You know, the snuff that they used to, you know, sniff up their nose, you know, like in the old days, you know.
Oh, you mean the
tobacco?
Oh, okay.
The tobacco.
The legal nose tobacco. Okay.
Yeah, all that, you know, real highfalutin stuff that's...
Actually, I've been offered that one time and I said...
You have?
I have. Down in... My parents are retired in Florida. My dad goes to this little synagogue in between the apartment buildings where my parents live and my grandparents, my mother's parents live. And after you go to the Bima and you're with the rabbi and then you say what you have to say for God and some wonderful things, I sit down. And this guy comes up to me with a little freaking box and I'm like, he's like, you want some? I'm like, no. So he takes it for me.
Nice.
I know.
I imagine, yeah, I kind of imagine that that's what like Chuck Blazer and Sunil Gulati and Don Garber, that's what those guys do in their top secret. Yeah, Jack Warner. Yeah. Well, we're gonna go into some other news while
yes,
Daniel composes himself.
I'm good now. Yes, please, let's move on.
But so I Daniel, I gave you an agenda, but I wanted to add one thing at the very top because it was something that I think is quite important to talk about, even though we didn't really think of it. Tom Sermonti was fired as the coach of the women's national team, let go, mm-hmm. And I don't think they've named a replacement coach yet. But you know, obviously Pia Sundhage had some very you know, good results. Never was able to take care of the World Cup for the United States, but in the Olympics was always able to lead the team to victory. But I guess Sermonti had some issues in recent, like the Algarve Cup, which is in Portugal. I believe they bombed out of that, losing at least one and maybe two matches that were pretty suspect. So I don't know.
Yeah, this is one of those weird firings that I don't understand right now. Obviously, it sounded like the players are also wondering why he was sacked as well. I don't know if we'll ever get the real reason from U.S. Soccer, but obviously, with the Women's World Cup and qualifying going to be underway very soon towards, I would say, after the World Cup in Brazil at the end of July 13th, I mean, U.S. Soccer is going to have to go and find a new head coach and implement some stuff real quick because the Women's World Cup is going to be next year, and hopefully the U.S. women will go back to the top and get back to the final and win it. This is a big question mark right now.
And it's a huge one, too, because it's up in Canada. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, there should be a lot of easy access for U.S. fans to get up there to You know, assuming you have your passport or whatever you need to get over there, or your driver's license being up to date. I know I did that a while back. you know, should be a nice, you know, a U.S. would want to continue to display their dominance over the Canadians.
Right.
Let's go on to the men's side and the men's national team. We were talking ahead of time what we wanted to discuss on this, and I guess we wanted to continue to talk about some out-of-form players maybe coming back into form. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Clint Dempsey earlier, but had a pretty good weekend this weekend, and while he still hasn't quite gotten there as far as the national team goes, you know, maybe some hints that he's getting himself out of this.
I hope so. I hope that's the case there in the hat trick against Portland, and especially leveling it late in the second half on that penalty. I mean, you know, Clint Dempsey is an important piece to the national team. You know, we're not strangers to seeing him having these negative games for the national team whenever he decides to drop off on his own. But it sounds like this might have been a prolonged slump mentally. The truth is that even though he didn't do much against Mexico in the friendly over in Glendale, Arizona, still, you know, that attitude, that negative attitude keeps creeping back in whenever he wants it to. And we really need him to get back on track, to be focused. I hope he starts to go on a tear. It sounds like this hat trick might be it. And I'm hoping he goes all the way into the send-off series, and of course we'll find out if Jurgen Klinsmann will give him that roster spot. I want Dempsey to succeed. We need him in Brazil to be one of the top players that he has shown in the past.
I mean, I also think that he's a guy that, you know, you when he's not in good form, you think, oh man, he's just a poor captain. But I think if he is in form, he's a guy that can be very energetic, can be, you know, a bit boisterous when he celebrates, and, you know, guys can sort of get around. So, you know, it's there may be other choices on this team that may be a little bit better, but if he gets back into form, I don't have much of a problem with Dempsey being the captain going forward. Another guy is Michael Bradley, who has been, you know, obviously he was transferred out of Roma to Toronto. He's been picking it up. A goal and assist in Phoenix in that friendly against Mexico. He got a goal. He got a goal this weekend for Toronto. So yeah, I mean, he's starting to look like he's digging out of it too.
Oh, absolutely. I think Michael Bradley, and I've always been saying this, you know, I feel bad for him that he's no longer at Roma. I mean, look, I'm happy he's back in Major League Soccer. Toronto signed him to that nice lucrative deal, and he's showing why Roma is missing out on his ability. I understand from everyone I've talked to that, you know, there are people at Roma that were probably a little higher on the depth chart, and the new coach that took over didn't really want him, which is really a shame, because if you had a guy like Michael Bradley on your side, you know, he would definitely be better for your offense. And I think he would probably be right now, if it was a Champions League team in UEFA, he'd be on that team doing strong things. But once again, the big stigma against Americans would be the attacking players, not defensive players, attacking players, because right now, you know, they don't want them. And I just don't understand it. But good for Michael Bradley. He's getting his minutes, and he will definitely be a big cog in the plans of Jurgen Klinsmann this coming June.
Yeah, and last but not least, Jozy Altidore, still struggling at Sunderland. He supposedly made some comments in the press about his manager, Gus Poyet. Things haven't worked out well for Altidore. Obviously, when he was brought in under
Paulo Di Canio.
Di Canio, I couldn't remember his name.
That's okay.
And he was sacked within the first month or so of the season, and they brought in Poyet, and Poyet really hasn't led a tactical revolution there. Actually looks probably more dire than it did under Di Canio. So Altidore has been struggling, mm-hmm. and because of his negative comments, it sounds like he's been dropped to the U21 team, which is basically a big-time slap in the face.
It really is. And the sad thing is that, once again, you know, is Jozy strong enough and mentally tough enough to play in the EPL? And at the same time, Sunderland is a poor side. Sunderland is just a team that's in disarray. It's in shambles in the EPL. I would not be surprised if they do go the relegation zone and head to the championship at the end of the year. But the big question is, would Josie stay there? And you know, we'll see what happens. But the point, once again, unfortunately, Earl, is that this is a World Cup year. Josie needs minutes on the first squad. And, you know, he's been relegated from starter to the bench. And now with these comments, bench to the under-21s. And I understand Josie's frustrated, but he has to understand he's got to keep his mouth shut and not be in the ire of the head coach. Whether you like him or not, whether you think he's smart or if you think he's just not doing his job to help the club win, you got to keep your mouth shut and just got to try and trudge on, because there's a bigger picture later on this summer, and that's the World Cup. And I hate to say this, even though I think Jurgen Klinsmann might bring him over anyway, but the truth of the matter is this. I think his roster spot's in jeopardy right now.
It's close, but I think you should – I mean, we could have a whole segment in a show about whether, you know, like the best parts of – you know, or what the best move is if a player should – aim high and challenge himself like Jurgen Klinsmann has talked about, which is something that I think Altidore did moving to Sunderland, or if they should take a deal such as like he could might have been able to at Alkmaar for a little bit less in order to, but he gets to play lots of minutes and obviously had already bet in there, was playing well, you know, probably was not going to suffer this kind of a detrimental drop in form. If he had stayed there, I don't think so, at least.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. I think him and Aaron Johansson would have teamed up, and I think those two would have been a hell of a tandem, not just for Alkmaar, but for the U.S. national team. Because I think right now, Johansson is right now the most dangerous striker for the U.S. men's national team going into Brazil. And while that's nice to talk about, the problem is who's going to be with him up top, and that's the big question mark right there.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, you know, I don't know, is there necessarily going to be a two forward team, you know, two forward lineup, but you know, you want to have, you'd like to have someone sitting right behind him, and whether it's, I don't know.
We
could talk more about the tactics. You know, we could talk a lot about
tactics. This is the big question
right
there. I wasn't
quite prepared for
No, that's okay. I mean, but we have to be honest with the audience and ourselves. I mean, look, do I think Josie can still do something with the national team? Is it a breath of fresh air? Probably it is. But unfortunately, it's your form in what you're doing with your club now. Should he have not taken the money and stayed at AZ Alkmaar? You know, hindsight's 20/20, and I would say so. Yes, he should have stayed in the Eredivisie. But unfortunately, the EPL is considered the best league in Europe. It may be the most popular league in Europe, but you know, I think the truth is that La Liga in Spain and Bundesliga in Germany are the more technical. And while you want to make it in the best league in the world, I mean, sometimes you're just going to have to say to yourself, I'm going to have to stay where I am because I'm comfortable where I am, because I want to be where I am, and this is where I'm very successful. And he didn't do that, unfortunately. Like I've said many times, sometimes it's a gift and sometimes it's a curse to perform well or badly in the Premier League in England.
You know, I think what my tactic would be if I was Klinsmann would be going into the friendlies pre-World Cup, I would probably take an expanded roster and include Altidore in that for sure. Give him a game or two or three to show that he isn't necessarily in bad form. He's just being used out of character or in a poor tactical role for him at Sunderland. If he can come into the team in the first game or two and maybe get a goal, show that he's able to continue to do that hold up play and be of more utility than maybe just scoring goals, but to, you know, set up Donovan or Dempsey on that secondary run, or you know, if he could do those things, take him to Brazil. I think he is by far the most talented or the most accomplished forward on the men's national team right now. I mean, you could argue Johansson, but I think so. I would be inclined to take him, and you know, if he does not show that, you dump him before Brazil. You say, listen, we gave you a chance. You know, you're going to have to talk with management at Sunderland and figure out how you're going to get yourself back into this. I mean, you'll be on the team in 4 years almost certainly, unless you completely blow up your career. But at the moment, you know, I think it's a wait and see thing for him. I think I would be more inclined to take a guy like Chris Wondolowski if Altidore can't do what he is being asked to do. You know, I think Wondolowski is a guy who could get you a goal at the end.
I think Wondolowski cemented his position in the Mexico friendly. I really think Wando has shown that he can score. I think he's shown that if you need that late game heroics to pull out a point or to get that go-ahead goal to win the match in stoppage time, I think Wondolowski has made his point, and I think he's going to go. I mean, this is going to be a very tough decision for Jurgen Klinsmann before that friendly against Turkey in the send-off series, because he says he's going to announce his roster on that day to go to Brazil. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, you know, Wondolowski is that last forward. That's, you know, it would be if it were a year ago, it'd be Altidore. Well, you wouldn't even a year ago have had Johansson, but Johansson will be in there, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Johnson, although mm-hmm. he does play on the left, he is, I would still consider him a forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that last position is kind of like Wondolowski. Well, to me, there may be another forward you throw in there. You might even want to consider Agudelo, although, you know, that's maybe a little bit of a stretch, but I mean, he's playing well right now.
Mm-hmm.
At Utrecht, so
it might be Boyd. You never know.
Or Boyd, but you know, Boyd. I mean, you've got that last spot is there. But if you have to choose between an out of form Altidore and a guy who's not out of form in Wondolowski, but also a guy who has shown that he can actually score some goals that are big. I mean, he hasn't done it in the MLS playoffs, but you know, the team itself there in San Jose is known for its late heroics.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I might want to roll the dice with Wondolowski if Altidore is just lost.
Very true. But at the same time, before we move on to our next segment, if Klinsmann's going to throw his 4-5-1 out there, I could see Dempsey being that withdrawn forward, linking up with the midfield. And if you're going to have Johansson up top, but just ahead of Dempsey, I could see that happening. Because then you got Donovan on the right side in the midfield crossing the ball. You could probably put Eddie Johnson as well as in the midfielder on the left side as a winger. Or even have Eddie Johnson behind Johansson or Dempsey, whoever you're going to put up front. Because if Jurgen's going to go 4-5-1, I mean, I could see that. But, the forward position right now is getting very thin. I think we already have our 2 to 3 players. It's going to be the fourth one. And it's not so much about who's going to be that final forward. I think the final forward, I'm agreeing with you, is Wondolowski. It's going to be that number two or that number one forward that you want to be up top with Johansson.
Yep. Lots of questions, and we haven't even gotten to things like the back line or the midfield, which seems to have a lot of players that could be of utility there. But we'll have to talk more about that as we get towards May and the World Cup approaches.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about some more recent news. Probably the big trade of the week happened between Philadelphia and Montreal. A swap of forwards. Jack McInerney sent to Montreal. McInerney was at the end of his contract, and it sounded like Philadelphia did not have any intent to re-sign him. So they send him to Montreal, and Philadelphia gets Andrew Wenger, a former first draft pick it was Montreal's first draft pick ever in MLS. Pretty sure about that, yeah. Kind of a swap of projects, we will say. McInerney had kind of come good last year for the first half of the year. Then he went and had a stint with the men's national team during the Gold Cup, and that seemed to just throw him off course, and he never really regained his form. Had a pretty decent start to the year for the Union this year, but once it happened, it seemed like that was, in my mind, I had always thought to myself, I wonder if they're going to get rid of McInerney, because it was his last year, try to get something out of him. Now they get Wenger, who has some time left in his contract. They were really looking for a guy to be a target forward, which McInerney doesn't really do that. So I guess I don't know if Wenger is that kind of guy either, but you know, I guess they're going to give it a roll.
Well, I just want to say, obviously, you knew more about the situation than I did because you're closer, obviously, in the Delaware, Philadelphia area. But I was shocked when I heard that they traded Jack McInerney to Montreal for Wenger. I think McInerney will fill that problem that I think Montreal has had at the start of the season in the midfield, as well as attacking for the Impact. They still might have a problem on the back line. You don't know. We'll see. But I think McInerney so far plugs a hole for Montreal. Philadelphia, you know, if I understand that it could be a money situation, that he didn't want to stay in Philly, or he felt he's more of a DP, which I'll agree with you if you think he's not, because I don't think he's there yet, which I will agree with you. But, you know, I'm very disappointed for McInerney and his behavior that he thinks he should get the big-time DP money now. I think maybe he was a year or two away from maybe being a real superstar in this league outside of Philadelphia, and at the same time with his national team aspirations in front of him. Do I think he's ruined those national team aspirations? No, I don't think so. But I think he's ruined himself becoming that big star in Philadelphia that, and you know this, you know, Philadelphia fans, doesn't matter what sport it is, they know who their big time players are and they will support them to the hilt forever and ever and ever.
Well, that's true. I mean, and you have, you know, you kind of have two players here where, you know, obviously McInerney's a little younger. Wenger is 23, but you have two players that, I mean, when you're taken as a first pick in the draft, you definitely have eyes on possibly being in the national team setup in the long run. And, you know, being in Montreal, I think that was difficult for Wenger because, number one, you're outside the country, and so the visibility for Jurgen Klinsmann is much less. Number two, you're sitting behind Marco de Vaio, who may be the best poacher that, you know, you could argue Robbie Keane as well, and there's some other names you could throw in there, you know, maybe Juan Pablo Angel, and there might be a couple others. You know, best poacher that's ever been in Major League Soccer. You know, one of these forwards that just knows how to, you know, plays that game where you try to beat the offside trap. And, you know, you get called for offside a lot, but those times that he actually makes it work, it's in the back of the net. I mean, almost invariably. So, you know, Wenger was having a tough time getting out from his shadow, probably learned a lot from him, but I'm not even sure Wenger is that kind of character as far as, you know, a poacher slash advanced forward who's going to make those runs. Actually, McInerney might learn more from de Vaio because McInerney is the type of player that does look for those, you know, creases and channels to run through. But I don't know. We'll have to see how this works. Like I said, both players kind of like, I'm sure, have men's national team aspirations. Can they prove that they belong there? You know, McInerney did early last year. I don't know if Wenger ever will. I mean, we'll have to see. I've been critical of him on Twitter. You know, I'm happy to give him a chance with the Union, being a supporter of the Union. We'll have to see if it works out.
Absolutely. We'll see what happens. Our next story comes from Dave Martinez from the Empire of Soccer website, that New York City FC will play their first season next year at Yankee Stadium on 161st Street and River Avenue in the Bronx. And it's a surprise because many thought they were going to get a temporary venue somewhere, not within the five boroughs, but maybe in Yonkers. Take a section of the parking lot at Yonkers Raceway, Empire City Casino. And they decided, because they're partners with the New York Yankees, they're going to play at Yankee Stadium next year. And once again, Earl, the situation of the stadium is simple. The Bronx Parking Authority, that owns the parking garage that used to be – well, it's still there, but the original stadium used to be across the street from it on the right side, or shall I say the right field side. And the Bronx Parking Authority has tax breaks from the city to try and help them, you know, ease their pain, but even though they are already in financial peril. The last mayor, Michael Bloomberg, was already going to give tax breaks to Don Garber and to Manchester City for that parking garage site. And at the same time, there's a manufacturing company that is across the street from where the old stadium was. And, of course, they had to knock out a service ramp off one of the major highways in the Bronx that leads into Yankee Stadium to be removed. So far, the corporation that owns the manufacturing company, GAL, they have not accepted the money from Manchester City to buy their property. And with the new mayor, Mayor Bill de Blasio, taking over New York City, he has already knocked down and said, you will not get this through. Because if it did happen, there would be tax breaks till 2054 on that site. The city would not get a dime till 2054 on this potential stadium deal that was done by Mayor Bloomberg before he left office.
Wow, that's pretty amazing there. But I mean, it just goes to show you, like, I mean, we earlier in the show we were talking about, you know, the good things that Don Garber has done. I would say that the last year, I think you've seen some things that make you wonder if they have their act together. You know, it seems like they haven't completely gotten their ducks in a row in each of these situations. And so we'll have to see how it all plays out. Hopefully it doesn't come back to bite anybody. But, you know, I would say Yankee Stadium isn't exactly the best place to be playing a soccer match.
No, it really isn't. And once again, I've talked to many people that are supporters of Manchester City, of Chelsea and PSG that live in New York City or live in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And they've said the sight lines are terrible at Yankee Stadium. And, of course, Major League Baseball has also protested that this the NYCFC should not be playing at Yankee Stadium because they're afraid the playing surface for the Yankees would not be at 100% like it normally is. And I just want to have a little defense here. Obviously, I haven't been defending this this idea for New York City FC, but my little defense is if Major League Baseball was so upset about it, then why they didn't mind sharing RFK when the Expos moved from Montreal to our nation's capital and shared it with DC United. I mean, it's basically the same argument, but they didn't make a big stink about it then.
And why don't you go ahead and explain this about the NASL commissioner, Bill Peterson. I guess he's trying to lobby CONCACAF.
Yes, he is. Apparently, Bill Peterson, the commissioner of the North American Soccer League, is trying to talk to CONCACAF to try and earn an automatic CCL spot in the future. When whatever future it is, I don't know. But, you know, isn't it interesting that you see someone talking about a second division side or at least a second division league trying to get a CONCACAF Champions League spot? Now, you know, when have you ever seen Leeds United, when they're not in the Premier League, lobby for a CCL spot because they're in the Championship or because they're in Football League One or maybe even in Football League Two? I think it's a foolish idea. I understand what he's trying to say. I know he's trying – he might not say it, but in a certain way he's trying to compete with Major League Soccer. But why should a second division league compete with a first division league? I mean, look, I know there are problems that some people have with Major League Soccer, and I agree with some of those problems that they need to fix. But let's be realistic here. While the North American Soccer League is a growing second division, and they're going to get better and better as they bring in more sides, and at the same time, financial health is also a good thing for the NESL. But to just come out of the blue and just say, we want a CCL spot. The only way they're going to earn a CCL spot is if one of their teams goes into the U.S. Open Cup and wins the whole thing. Until that happens, I cannot see both CONCACAF as well as U.S. Soccer allowing this to happen, because at the end of the day, it is the people at Soccer House in Chicago that makes everything go round for the sport within the borders of the United States.
Well, I mean, I honestly could potentially see an NASL team winning the U.S. Open Cup.
Me too.
I mean, I think MLS takes the U.S. Open Cup less seriously than they should, and so I think teams could very easily sneak through. The question is, could they go as far? I mean, you look at in England and you see Wigan Athletic being able to challenge, for the FA Cup. They're going to be going up against Arsenal. So, as much as I think it would, MLS is, I think, going to be very cognizant of what it would look like if an NASL team actually was able to go through and win the U.S. Open Cup. If they do, I mean, they'll get that berth into the CCL, and it would probably raise a lot of questions.
It probably would.
Within the sport. I don't know if it'd raise enough to ever have any of the issues that are the hot button issues be raised, but I don't know. It is pretty brazen for him to go there, and it's basically, like you said, along this lines of, we're going to start, NASL is going to start trying to challenge MLS's Division I sanctioning. I think that's what they ultimately want to do, probably.
Probably.
That's what the Cosmos want to do, most likely. So.
Well, we'll see what happens. But obviously, once again, I don't see the CCL a spot in the CONCACAF Champions League getting an automatic for the NASL. If that were the case, if the original NASL was still around, then obviously, CONCACAF would have, given them a Champions League spot. But that's not the case. Major League Soccer is the Division I league in the U.S. for the game in this country. And while it's a novel idea, and I give him a lot of chutzpah for making that choice, Bill Peterson, at the end of the day, if you win the U.S. Open Cup, one of your NASL teams, then you're going to the CCL, and that is that.
And that is that for this podcast. I think we've talked about out of this. We don't have any more line items in our agenda. And Daniel, thanks for taking out some time tonight to talk about MLS, U.S. soccer, and all things American football.
Absolutely. Just want to point this out real quick before we officially say goodbye. Just to let everyone know, if you've already haven't heard, the Arsenal is going to play the New York Red Bulls in a friendly July 26th. I know tickets are either on sale now or will be on sale soon. I know our friend Robert Hay is a big-time Arsenal fan. He better hurry and get his tickets if he wants to get up here for that big day.
Yeah, they might be hoisting the FA Cup there, or possibly holding up a picture of Wigan holding the FA Cup. But anyway. Yeah. So, hey, Daniel, how about if you give the listeners an idea where you can be found as far as your show, your writing, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, obviously, it's on blogtalkradio.com/FourYearsDeansFire. I always take a look in what's going on in American soccer on MLS, NASL, USL, PDL, Open Cup. And let's not forget, I will be covering the World Cup every single day. There are matches at the end of the final match from June 12th through July 13th. And hopefully my good friend Earl Reed will be joining me on some of these review shows. And, of course, you can catch some of my writings on the Red Bulls over at SoccerNewsDay.com.
Well, we will see about that. I assume my schedule will be free. I am looking forward to the World Cup, so hopefully things work out where I can help you out with those shows.
Not a problem.
So with that, let's close this out. How about if I don't know if you know our little tagline for the show. So how about if I give it and then next time you can?
You can do whatever you want. It's your show.
So for Daniel Feuerstein, my name's Earl Reed. This is the United States of Football Show, and I hope that until next time you take all 3 points.